Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. In the book, Nopamine, The Cure for White Ladies, seven beings within one entity help the narrative along through literary prose, dialogue, and poetry. Native writer Leanne Bidas-Samose Simpson presents a different kind of novel that takes a deep dive into poetic storytelling, where lessons are learned and voices are unleashed through the natural and modern world. Stay tuned for our March Book of the Month and our visit with Leanne. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A virtual international summit is underway this week on violence against Indigenous women. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it comes as some Native leaders are critical of the Canadian government over the delay of an action plan stemming from the national investigation into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls.
It's been almost 2 years since that national inquiry, and many First Nations people in Canada say they're frustrated by the slow response from Ottawa to the recommendations. The Native Women's Association of Canada is hosting a two-day International Summit of the Americas on violence against Indigenous women. Lynn Grew is the CEO of the association. She says more than 1,000 people will take part in the virtual summit called Silent No More.
The National Inquiry handed down a report in June of 2019 with 231 calls for justice and a finding of genocide against Canada. And we're now more than a year and a half in, and we have not seen an action plan yet. So we want to hear from the Americas what we can do to move things along a little bit faster.
Grew says there are what she calls some best practices out there, and she wants to hear about them. She says at the close of the summit, her organization will prepare a document to present to governments around the world. The government of Canada had promised to release a national action plan but delayed that move last year, blaming the coronavirus pandemic. Grew says her group was hoping to hear something concrete from Ottawa by June, the anniversary of the national inquiry. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
California courts could replace Columbus Day with California Native American Day under legislation which passed its first threshold in the state. Christina Onnestead reports.
California already has a Native American Day, but for those who work in the court system, it would be a paid day off to honor Native Americans rather than Christopher Columbus. Assemblymember James Ramos is the first Native American to serve in the state legislature and sponsor of the proposal.
For more than 20 years, I've worked towards creating a paid state holiday, recognizing and learning about the contributions of California's First People, because few Californians know much about the state's Native American history and culture, despite the fact that our state is home to more Native Americans than any other state in the nation. This bill will be the first step towards correcting that omission.
The change would only apply to the California court system and its employees. It's passed the State Assembly Judiciary Committee unanimously and heads to the Appropriations Committee next. I'm Christina Onnestead reporting from California for National Native News.
Arizona will officially recognize National Navajo Code Talkers Day. Governor Doug Ducey signed a bill Monday declaring the holiday on August 14th. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez in a statement said, Navajo Code Talkers' legacy is strengthened with the signing of the bill. In 2014, the state passed legislation declaring August 14th Navajo Code Talkers Day. The bill signed Monday recognizes a national proclamation to honor Navajo Code Talkers for their service in World War II. U.S. Senator Brian Schatz and Congressman Don Young recently introduced a bipartisan bill in Congress to support Native languages. The Native American Language Resource Center Act seeks to strengthen Native language schools and programs. It supports Native language students at all levels of learning and provides additional resources to enhance distance learning capacity. A number of organizations are supporting the bill, including the National Congress of American Indians and the National Indian Education Association. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Support by the Sanoski Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homeland, Soshirhwit-Tui. Sharing story is important to knowing, being, and belonging. And how you do it is important, as it can open a world of understanding. Our March Book of the Month author, Leanne Bidasamose Simpson, takes on this duty with a lot of might. Her novel, Nopamin, The Cure for White Ladies, pushes Western ways of story structure aside and makes space for Indigenous story building and weaving. At times, this work is full of dialogue. At times, it's meeting characters that are more than what they seem, including being the conscience, lung, or marrow of a being that's frozen in ice. And at times, this creation sets off reflections on life with straight talk, like, remember that words carry the ability to impact the chemistry of brains and beating of hearts. Or in the great words of Leanne's character, Mindamoya, stop fiddle farting around, you're not building a pig barn. There is definitely a lot to be explored in Nopamin. So as we jump into the pages of this book, we hope you will join us too. The first 10 people to make it on air with a comment or question today will get a copy of Leanne's work courtesy of the University of Minnesota Press. So go ahead, dial in now to let your voice be heard. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us today from Petersboro, Ontario, in Canada, is writer, scholar, and musician Leanne Bidasamose Simpson. And Leanne is Michi Sagik Nishabek and a member of the Alderville First Nation. Our pleasure to have her here. Welcome to Native America Calling, Leanne.
Anin Tara, it's so nice to be here today visiting with you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Leanne, I really enjoyed the pages that I got to explore and really had a lot of fun just thinking about, the way we take in story and the way you have mapped out things on the pages is a lot different than what people may be used to. And then for other people, it's exactly how they understand story. And so talk to me a little bit about your approach to this book.
I grew up hearing lots of stories in my Anishinaabeg family. And I, as a young adult, I really fell in love with my culture and my language and stories. And so I cherished and I found those times when elders would tell stories in the oral tradition, something that was really, really precious. As a writer, I wanted to sort of use that background as the spine of my written stories. And so in this book, it was my first attempt at writing something longer. And when I got into the process of writing, I quickly realized that the novel, as we're used to reading it, is something that is very steeped in Western literary traditions, and it's designed to sort of communicate that world. And so I found myself going back to those moments and those memories where I had heard oral stories, and I wanted to sort of capture the energy and the feeling and use some of the same types of techniques and skills to connect with people in this book and in these stories. And so the structure ends up looking different than I think some readers are used to. but I think oftentimes Indigenous and Native American audiences are able to see themselves and their communities inside the pages, and that really fills my heart up.
And it's encouraging, too, that there are other ways of telling story, especially if you come through the educational system where you're told this is how you do it. And so you're really breaking a lot of, I don't know, ceilings or whatever you want to call them by doing this, but also inviting in people who know how important story is, and especially stories that we are only able to tell at certain times of the year. And so for you, Leanne, the people you introduce us to, or I shouldn't say people, the beings that you introduce us to are so dynamic. Go ahead and set the novel up for us on exactly what it is we are discovering as we go through the pages.
I think, first of all, I thought really carefully about all of the Anishinaabeg ethics around storytelling and what stories are meant to tell and what stories are others for others to tell, or can only be told at a certain time of year, or are ceremonial in nature. And then I thought very carefully about each one of the characters. The narrator in this book's name is Mashkawaje, which means they're frozen in the ice. And the character has experienced the trauma, as is so common to those of us who live in occupied nations or under colonialism. But the trauma really isn't explored. It's sort of in the background, and the character is shut down as a sort of response to that trauma. And they're frozen in the ice, they're frozen in a lake. And so they're relying on these seven other characters to be their eyes and their ears and their conscience and their heart as they spend time sort of being held by the lake, as they spend time healing. And so this sort of web of interconnections and interdependencies and relationships almost forms the setting for the book. The characters love each other very much. There's lots of there's lots of humor in their interactions, and I really wanted to have a lot of Anishinaabe joy in the book, because I mean, that's what I see in my family, and that's what I see in my community. I see that sort of lots of laughing and lots of taking care of each other, no matter what's going on.
And what you are able to accomplish is a lot, and I think just parallel, or just thinking about the ice and you know, it being frozen and coming into the spring and what, you know, starts to change with that. It's really interesting. We're talking about all of this right now. And so, Leanne, let's go ahead and give them a sample of what we find in Nopaming, which is our book of the month. We are on the line with the author, Leanne Bidas-Amose-Simpson. If you'd like to talk with her, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We do have 10 copies to share with you when you make it on air, but you got to do that by dialing in. So go ahead, call in now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And Leanne, go ahead, take us to Nopaming.
This is the very first part of the book. Once you move through cold, there is Pacific. Once you move through Pacific, there is placid. Once you move through placid, there is a condition of expanse. And it was in that condition of expanse that held me. I heard them singing above me. Mashkawaje fell through the ice to find quiet, to get out of the wind, to visit with Namego. They all sang Mashkawaje stitches up the hole. They are so cold they can't move. They are frozen stiff. The lake is their blanket. They all sang Mashkawaje is frozen stiff. Still, calm. No one knows if they're coming back. They all sang Akewenze is fishing through the ice with a spear. They brought a line of beads. They will wait patiently. They will wait patiently until Mashkawaje is done their visit. The singing and drumming came every night from a distance. different choirs every evening at dusk, marking the passage of time, reminding me there is still love. You see, tragedy happened again. The details don't matter because the details are hopeless, overwhelmed, shut down. Know this. After 2 years, the best parts of me are still frozen in the lake. My limbic system, its best friend, the prefrontal cortex, and the hollow pumping organ in which I keep benevolence. The only one that regularly comes to visit is Akewenze. In the winter, they park their truck on the ice, drill a hole with the auger, and fish until the cold makes their bones crack. As soon as the ice is off the lake, Akewenze is back in their boat with a torch and a sort of pitchfork for spearing pickerel. In the dead of summer, Akewenze sneaks back before first light in their canoe, before the cottagers and their jet skis are out. In the fall, they sprinkle tobacco around me and sing. My world is muted. I look out. If something upsets me, I just wait and the upset passes. I sit beside. Sometimes I remember the other me when I was before I was frozen in the lake. I remember caring and engaging and the sharpness of unmuted feeling. I remember hopeless connection. I don't feel stuck, in part because I don't feel anything. Their song isn't wrong. The ice is like a warm weighted blanket. My form dissolved when tragedy came, and if I am fluid, the ice is container. There are ashes in my eyes. I am so far inside myself, like Miss Guadeschi on a full fast, inside time, pulled inside their organs, inside their turtle shell, inside the sediments of the lake, while the ice world formed on top, oblivious to the outside, with body as lake. And there is solace being cut off, and there is freedom enmeshed within the state. Know this, being frozen in the lake is another kind of life. Know this. It is unclear how long before I will be done with my visit. It is unclear how long visiting takes. Know this, visiting is more of a dance than an event.
Leanne Bida Samose Simpson is here with us. You're hearing her story. Nopaming, you can talk directly with her. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and dial in and we'll share one of her books with you. We'll keep the phone lines open. Again, 1-800-996-2848 is how you reach us. We look forward to hearing your voice. As spring begins, bears across North America are emerging from their winter hibernation. It's also a time when many tribes express their high regard for bears. Tribes honor bears with dances, ceremonies, and clan names. We'll learn more about the cultural significance of bears on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and it is our March Book of the Month, and we are talking with writer Leanne Bida Samose Simpson, who is sharing her book, Nopaming, The Cure for White Ladies. If you'd like to speak to her directly, we hope you'll pick up the phone and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Leanne, I want to take us to a caller who is joining us today out of Wellpinit, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. We have Bill. Bill, welcome. Go ahead. You're on air.
Good morning. I was listening to your book and your introductory. And when I think about what she was talking about being the stories that are told, and there's so many places that campfires all over that keeps us ground to the earth, and so much history in those stories. I think it's our oral history comes out so well in those stories. It keeps us indigenous because we as natives of this country can go out anywhere and grab some dirt and let it sift through our hands. We can see that's where we come from because those stories are handed down and it relates to our children's children and grandchildren. And I want to read your book because of the feeling I got when I heard you, your introductions and how you related to your ancestors and how they put you in perspective of the whole being of who we are.
Wonderful. Well, Bill, thanks for reaching out. Leanne, anything you want to tell Bill?
Miigwech, Bill. I think you're right. And I think that that oral practice is really something that's precious to me. And I think that writing can't really replace the kinds of things that you're talking about and the kinds of feelings that, that we get when we're together with our family and our extended community and we're telling stories. I think for me, writing is just another tool to sort of connect outside of my own territory with other Indigenous folks and with other readers. So thank you so much for your kind words.
Yes, Bill, thank you for your call there out of Washington. We now go to Kathy, who is in Duluth, Minnesota. Kathy, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on here.
Kathy from Minnesota, just wondering, wondering if you would describe, please, the lake that you were you based your book upon, your narrative upon. I swim across Great Lakes, and I'm a water person, and I'm very attracted to your narrative. Really grateful that you did this.
All right, Kathy, go ahead, Leanne.
Bonjour, Kwee. I grew up around the Great Lakes as well. I grew up very close to Lake Huron, and I live very close now to Lake Ontario. So I sort of envisioned when I was writing this a smaller lake than the Great Lakes, just because they don't freeze over completely every year anymore, and so I imagined my reserve is on Rice Lake. I spend a lot of time in Curve Lake First Nation, which is on Chemung Lake. So I sort of imagined a smaller lake, like the kinds of lakes that we go ice fishing on and drive across. But I think also this book is the Great Lakes were really, really important. I think in my culture, we think of those as the like internal organs of Mother Earth. And I think that they've just been like a huge influence on my life in general. So yeah, thank you for that question and bringing the water into the conversation.
Kathy, thank you for your call there out of Duluth, Minnesota. Join us too. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. It is our March Book of the Month, and we got 8 books left. Plenty of time to also jump into the conversation. Call us again, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And so, Leanne, the characters, I had a lot of fun. I was laughing, I was worried for them, and, you know, just enraged at times of some of the things that they were witnessing. And to be able to wake up emotions like that in a reader, that takes, you know, it takes heart. And the characters that you have introduced us to are definitely people we can see reflections of in our tribal communities. And I shared a quote from Mindamoya at the beginning of the hour, and just, you know, some straight talk and some of the things they do, you know, we can relate to. And even thinking about, you know, her ways of keeping hors d'oeuvres toothpicks to be used for other uses later on. And each one of these characters, they have a personality. There's one who's kind of like an old man that we can relate to, people in our families, or when we start seeing some of these actions and we're reflecting some of that. Introduce us to more of the characters in this book. Go ahead.
Minnamaya is one of my favorite characters, and in my language, that literally means an old woman. Brenda Child writes, so sort of if you break that word down, it means the one who holds things together, which I think is a really beautiful kind of vision that I get with that word. And Minnamaya is resourceful. They cut through. they cut through the mess, I think, and they are sort of sharp tongued. They speak the truth, but also in a very, very, very loving way. And they're a residential school survivor. Akawende is our word for old man, and Akawende is another one of my favorite characters, who's much more, I would say, calm and chilled out in comparison to Minnamaya. Akawende, ake is the word for land, and so that word can mean an older person who's getting closer to going back to the land and to passing into the spirit world. Then there's a couple of characters that are more spiritual in nature. A dick, which is a caribou character. There used to be caribou in my territory several hundreds of years ago. So that character plays a role in the story. Minatek is a maple tree, and that character is really prominent in our territory right now because lots of Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee are tapping the sugar bushes and collecting that sap and making maple sugar or maple syrup. So Minatek is a tree. And they're interacting with all the characters as well. And then we have some younger characters, Astin and Lucy, that are trying to reconnect to their culture, are trying to relearn, and are being mentored in a way, I guess, by Minnamoya and Akawende and these other cast of characters. And so the characters are moving kind of around my territory, which is in the north shore of Lake Ontario. So it's through big cities like Toronto, but we also have reserves. We also have bush. We also have rural areas. And so it's sort of intervening and trying to remember that even if you're in the city, you're still on Indigenous land, and our ancestors are still there, and our spiritual beings are still there, and we can still be Indigenous in those urban areas. The book is set in the present, but the characters are always having conversations with our ancestors and spiritual beings and thinking about those generations that are still to come. And I think that that's really reflective of so many of our Indigenous cultures in North America.
And you're also playing with space, because what you read for us in the first part of the hour talks a little bit about, you know, kind of setting things up or some of those things that are being experienced. And then you jump to things like, you know, just straight dialogue where we hear what people are saying to each other, what they're thinking, their reflections on their world. And then there are times when there is straight poetry that is being, you know, spread across the pages. And for you to put all this in one book, what does that mean to you? Or what is your hope that people will take away from the different structures you introduce them to?
I think about being on the land with elders. And I think sometimes there isn't a lot of talking. Sometimes there's a lot of quiet and there's a lot of space. And so in the book, there's a lot of quiet in sort of blank spaces on the page, or there isn't a lot of extra dialogue. I think sometimes those elders break into story. Sometimes someone will get out a drum and they'll have a drum song. Sometimes a language speaker will explain a word and the poetry within that word just sort of spills out. So I think I wanted to sort of try to reflect that feeling in the book. So there's lots of different ways that the characters are communicating, I think, with the reader. And there's lots of different levels and layers to the story and ways that the story is happening. And I was interested in playing with space and time, because I think when you have my culture, anything that is alive has a spirit. There's sort of a division between animate and inanimate things. And so when you have that spiritual component, that's the time and the space doesn't make sense in the way that it does in Western thought, with a past and a present and a future and sort of really strict boundaries around those. So I wanted to have some of that kind of fluidity around time and space in the book that kind of reflected a more Anishinaabe understanding.
And, you know, when you turn through this, it just seems so natural, because sometimes you're taking in a lot of thought, and then the next page, there's one line on that page, and it just gave time for things to kind of sink in, or just kind of, you know, let your mind just kind of play around. So I really appreciate some of the way that you navigate a reader through this. If you'd like to talk with Leanne, you can dial in now, 1-800-996-2848. The name of the book is Nopaming. And let's go ahead and take a call. We're going to say hi to Michael, who is in Jemez Pueblo, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Michael, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Thank you for taking my call, Sarah. Yeah, it's storytelling and in the way that it was just described with the futuristic, and also, you know, present, future, and past. And also, you know, we're taught from our ancestors that everything is alive. Mother Nature, Father Sky, everything is alive. And, you know, in that part of Canada, you know, you have the rich forests, the rich rivers, the lakes. And then down here in the Southwest, it's pretty dry. But at the same time, when you compare the characters, you kind of delve into the mesas and the mountains and the streams down here, which is rich in stories, and it's a teaching. It's how our ancestors taught us how to live, how to survive, and how to teach our children how to think of the future and the past and the present, which is all tied in, which our medicine people tell us, and song and dance also portray. And, you know, just listening to her, you know, it makes me go to places that I have visited and want to visit. So thanks a lot, Cheryl.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for your call there in Jemez Pueblo. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. It is our March Book of the Month, and looks like we have plenty of books left. Dial in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Leanne, when we talk about weaving spaces, it seems there is also commentary on how things are, and also reminding us of how things were. Before there was concrete everywhere, and it was just a really fun moment. Some of the dialogue that was happening with Adik, where their hooves were sore, and then the elder tells him, you know, he can use Dr. Ho's circulation promoter. That was so funny. Tell me more about putting these things together, and maybe even go further on this moment that I brought up.
I think one of the things that I was trying to do was I was trying to think through sort of the impact of colonization on animals and plants and on the spirit world, because I tend to, you know, focus on what it's been like for the Anishinaabe or for humans. And so I was thinking through what it would be like to be an ancestor and sort of be watching this unfold. I was thinking through what that would be like if you were a 400-year-old maple tree in my territory, and you had just seen sort of the last 400 years. What would it be like for caribou spirits who, you know, are walking on pavement now? And so there's lots of sort of little, I think, hints to that in the narrative. I also I wanted to bring in that sort of humor that's so loving, I think, that's in our families. And the Dr. Ho, I know lots of elders in my territory and other territories use little things like Dr. Ho that they've seen on TV to ease their aches and pains. And it's and it's not seen as something that's a problem. And so I thought that that was sort of just a really beautiful, funny kind of moment where I'm sort of speaking to that strength and that resilience and that persistence and sometimes that stubbornness of Indigenous people. We're going to be Indigenous no matter what happens and no matter what you throw at us, we're still here. And we're still living this way. We're still building these worlds so our children and our families can live in them, whether or not they're seen by non-Indigenous people or not.
And I like how that scene wraps up, too, where the caribou or the old man tells him, you know, take it, you need it more than me. And then the caribou, he doesn't, because as you write, it won't fit into their backpack for one thing. And they would get 38 AAA batteries anyway. Bringing those things together is really, you know, opening up a lot of things. And then later on in the book, where you talk about we're still going to exist no matter what, we turn to some other characters that you introduce us to at the end of the book. And I'd like to hear more of that coming up after this break. But if you are interested in this book and what our author is saying, dial in now. Phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And you can also get a copy of the book if you make it on air with a comment or question. So don't wait. Go ahead and dial now. The number one more time is 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And you can talk directly to Leanne, tell her what you're thinking, and maybe even ask questions, too, on how she navigates story. You can ask technical things like that, too. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We look forward to you dialing in and talking with our Book of the Month author.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Thanks for spending part of your day with us right here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. And with me on the line today is writer, scholar, and musician Leanne Bidasamose-Simpson. And we are featuring her book, Nopaming, The Cure for White Ladies. If you'd like to share some thoughts with her, call in now, 1-800-996-2848. And let's take another call. We're going to say hi to Cindy, who is in Bemidji, Minnesota, tuned in today on KOJB. And thanks for giving us a call, Cindy. Go ahead. You're on air.
Hi, Leanne. I just wanted to thank you for writing this beautiful book. I moved up to Bemidji from Minneapolis a couple of years ago, and the call up here was just to be around the Ojibwe culture and to learn more. And someday be able to go to a powwow. So I'm very excited to read your book. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. We now go to Al in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Al, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Hi. Hi. Hello. I just love the writing style. Kind of reminds me of real storytelling, not the ones that have like... this is how you write a paragraph style, which is not fun. And also, I wanted to say that that her writing style also reminds me of an art style called Indigenous Futurism, which is kind of it's a lot of artists who do a combination of future, past, and kind of like the eternal. And thank you.
and that is a great space to be too. Thanks for that. And let's take one more. We got Denise in El Prado, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Denise, thanks for your call. You're on air.
I was totally intrigued by the author describing her thought processes as she put the book together. It sounds so creative and imaginative. That really caught my attention. And I thought, I got to read this. I just wanted to say thank you for the book and thank you for describing how, you know, how, what you were thinking and what you were doing as you put it together.
Well, Denise, thanks for reaching out. You can reach out too. Join us at 1-800-996-2848. Okay, looks like we got 4 books left, so you got to dial now. 1-800-996-2848. And Leanne, the latter part of the book is really bringing that dialogue forth of, you know, where we are today, and, you know, how we are living in concrete jungles, as some would say, and how we can still be, how we can exist, but also how all of this affects us. And a couple of the characters help us get through this, the raccoon and the goose. And anything you want to share about what these characters are teaching us?
Well, I thought a lot about those animals that we're sharing urban life with. And where I live in Canada, there's lots of geese, and geese used to fly south to Florida every year, so they would miss the winter. And we have lots of stories about why they do that, and I love that because it connects us to all of the Indigenous peoples and their territories through down the eastern seaboard of the United States. But now, as a result of global warming, not all the geese fly south. Some of them stay and live here all year round. And so there was an interesting sort of metaphor there for me about the geese that stay and the geese that leave. So we have a group of geese that are doing as they have always done and are doing as their geese ancestors have done. And then we have another group that have adapted to a changing environment and are now staying year-round. And so I thought that was a really kind of rich thing to explore. I have 2 sisters, and we share Lake Ontario with the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. So there's lots of things we share with the Haudenosaunee, and they, of course, have these 3 sacred plants, corn, bean, and squash. And so I named 3 of the geese corn, beans and squash in Anishinaabe. and that kind of exploration led to thinking about raccoons, because there's thousands of raccoons that live in Toronto and in big cities, and they're an animal that has not left the city. They've figured out a way of living raccoon lives and building raccoon worlds in the city. And so I thought that there was something interesting about that kind of persistence and stubbornness and resistance that I wanted to explore. And we have lots of interactions with raccoons, and a lot of times we think of them as pests because they're getting into our garbage, or they're, you know, living under our porches or walking into our houses. But I wanted to sort of use those stories to kind of get beyond the nuisance part of raccoons and think about how they are occupying space in an urban environment. And so that ended up also being metaphorical and also being very funny, I think.
And they're living some pretty interesting lives, and kind of the personification that they get in the story. And just even some of the things they're doing, I'm going to go to one of your pages where, and say the name for me, how you say raccoon in your language.
Esteban.
Okay, and so Esibanag dug caches through the city in parks where they stored the essentials, naloxone kits, sleeping bags, dry caribou meat from the Denny, and only the kindest of words. And so, you know, there's some really, as you said, rich stuff that you have opened up in thinking about all this. I think there's a lot still to be learned, and you could even read this book in small bits and just kind of take away and think about what you just read and thinking about your life or just thinking about what this is opening up. And when we get something that prompts us to do things like that, sometimes it helps us make sense of the world. Sometimes it helps us challenge it. And writing is definitely a way that a lot of our Native authors have turned to do some of this. And we really appreciate what Leanne is bringing to us today. And I know there are more people who want to talk with her. So let's go ahead and go back to our phone lines. We're going to say hi to Walter, who is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Walter, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Thanks for taking my call. First of all, I'm a regular listener and a huge fan of Native America Calling. I'm not Native myself, but I've been listening to it for years, and it's one of the best programs on radio. So directly, the book sounds absolutely fascinating, and I look forward to reading it. It sounds like you're trying in some ways to give voice to the Native world, and I wonder if you could talk just a little bit further about how you go about actually giving voice to inanimate objects and animals even that don't typically get that kind of agency, if you will, that comes with being able to speak for oneself. So I'll just turn it over, and thanks again for taking my call and for writing the book.
Well, Walter, thank you for your words, and thank you for tuning in. Go ahead, Leanne.
Thank you much, Walter. I think in my culture, we think of the plants and animals that we're sharing our territory with as sort of autonomous, independent nations and individuals with their own knowledge and their own stories. And a lot of, I think, those very first treaties we have is with animals and plants. And so for me, it wasn't anything different than I've ever known. We have lots and lots of stories within Anishinaabe culture about plants and animals. And I think that I would think of them as my teachers and my relatives and as part of my family. I think that when I hear a story from an Anishinaabe storyteller, it's almost like a seed, and it's something that I would carry around with me, and I would think about the meaning in terms of my own life, and I might get that story out and think about it. I might pack it up into my heart and carry it around a little bit more. But I would work with that story, and I would understand that story as a responsibility for me to sort of think about that and to carry it through my life and work with it to find meaning almost as a spirit. And so I think that that's a really beautiful way of looking at stories as a way of something that carries teachings and meaning and care from our ancestors rather than just something to entertain, although, of course, that's part of it as well.
Nice. Walter, thanks for your call. We now go to Joseph, who is in Taos, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Joseph, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. That was a fantastic opening passage that you read, Tara, and it had me glued to the characters. I love this idea of animated, non-animated characters, you know, objects and things. They're also observing everything at the same time. So I'm going to read this book no matter what. This is such a great, great moment in time. So I look forward to it, and I really enjoyed your conversations today.
Okay, thank you for that. And let's take one more call out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. We have Celia, I think it is. Go ahead, you're on air.
Hi, Tara. I just, like Walter, I love this program. It helps me live. And there's nothing better on the radio. I appreciate it so much. And I also write, and I got very excited listening to this author and hearing about this book, and especially about, I wondered if you have any more comments about writing about invisible things that, you know, that happen, the spirit world interacting with the visible world, and how, you know, I want to doubt myself sometimes, or I want to, I'm just very careful about writing about things like that and how to really get connected to the reality of it.
All right. Thank you for that, Leanne. Anything for Celia?
I think for Native American writers and Indigenous writers, we have to think really carefully about the ethics of writing about our spirituality. Because we have to be careful. We have to be very careful with how we do that and if we do that. And I think those decisions are sort of made collectively by communities and elders and groups of people. At the same time, I think it's important to, as an Indigenous writer, to sort of create worlds where Anishinaabe people and where Indigenous people can see themselves inside the stories and can relate and feel like their lives are affirmed and can feel some truthfulness in it. I think that I didn't grow up with that when I was a kid. Anything that I would read that would have a, oh, I don't even know if I read anything that had an Indigenous character or a Native American character, but if I did, it wouldn't often be, our lives wouldn't be presented in a good light. So I think there's lots of conversations, important conversations that I think we're having as communities and groups of people. And there's no answer that's going to be right for everyone. But I think what's important is a consideration of those ethics and a consideration of those ethics in a community of people.
And again, thank you for your call, Celia. And Leanne, we are getting close to the end of the hour, and there's so much more I want to ask and talk about, including the title of the book and also your use of pronouns in the book, as well as the language and what you're doing with that. And any of those you'd like to touch on, we got a couple of minutes before we wrap.
Sure. I'm a language learner, and so the more I use language, the better I get at it. And there's lots of language in this book. And for non-speakers or folks that don't speak Ojibwe or Anishinaabe, you can go online to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary from the University of Minnesota, and you can type in the words and get a translation and often get an audio clip of how to pronounce them. Nokoming is a word in my language that means in the bush. And in the mid-1800s, Susanna Moody, who is a white pioneer woman, wrote a book called Roughing It in the Bush, which was sort of a guidebook for colonizers coming into the land. And of course, Indigenous people were treated in a very racist manner. So the book, me and the title is sort of a jumping off point for that and an amplification of Anishinaabe life, of Anishinaabe world, and the love we have for our language, our culture, and our land.
And anything you want to say? We've got a minute left talking about the pronouns.
In my language and in my culture, we have more than two genders, and we our language grammatically is split up with inanimate and inanimate. And so, well, you can gender pronouns. It's not something that's assumed. So I use the pronouns they, them in the book so that it would be sort of more accurate in terms of how we build the world, but also so that Indigenous queer folks could also see themselves inside the story. And so it's more inclusive to all of the people and all of the diversity that makes up our communities and our nation.
Well, thank you for that. And Leanne, if people do want to follow up, where did they find you?
You can. I have a website. I'm not on social media, but you can find me at leannesimpson.ca and leannesimpsonmusic.com.
Well, thank you for that. And then also you put out an album, and some of that album reflects exactly what we talked about today. Go ahead and give them the name of that album and 30 seconds. Go ahead.
The album is called Theory of Ice. You can find it on all your favorite streaming platforms. It was put out on the label You've Changed Records, and it's that middle part of the book that sort of breaks into song and poetry. And you can listen to the sound as well.
Very nice. And if you heard that break song, the first one, that's a sample of it. Well, so much. And again, we're just going to have to talk again. Have so much more I'd like to ask and share with you. Leanne Bidasamose, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling. Also, thank you to the University of Minnesota Press for also providing copies of the book to our listening audience today. And that's going to do it for our March Book of the Month. There'll be another one in April, so stay tuned for that. Get more information on our programs and when it's coming up by signing up for our newsletter at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And tomorrow, we hope you join us because we are going to be talking about the cultural significance of bears. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Support by the Sioux Trading Post, proud to provide traditional and contemporary American Indian craft supplies, from feathers, furs, and hides to conchos, fringe, shells, and beads, all available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila. Support by Northern Arizona University. Explore a career in business, policy, environmental science, health management, and more. Their interdisciplinary and online degrees will meet your career needs, where Indigenous knowledge is applied. nau.edu/native.
Ah, chas spukani. Chaitan kutinaksum lu and chas bio tin chashit ya twaske. In chinkan zuch and zintumist in chashit chasech spukani's upenhech zeal 2021. Kol naucht smeet, kol kol tausis, skelly such mariam yet sachem, chkoyment healthcare.gov, uchwach kol kol tausit, 1-800-318-2596. Hiets mamit and centers kol Medicare u Medicaid services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.